What is going on, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of And Big Red vs. the World. As always, I'm Big Red.
And after some technical difficulties, I'm Average Ant.
And we've got another special Closet Edition episode for you with Ant camping out in the only place he can record this morning. And with lots of exciting stuff going on, like the NBA postseason and the NFL draft, we got a pretty good episode for you. Ant can tell you a little more about it.
Yeah, so I guess we're calling this episode Standouts and Surprises of the First Round. So we got the standouts of the NBA First Round. I mean, I know it's not completed yet, but it's getting close. So with most of the series completed, we just wanted to talk about what stood out most to us on a team-to-team kind of basis, I guess, and then the surprises and just our overall first round reaction to the NFL draft that happened last night. So that's what we got on the menu today, and it'll be a good episode for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess with the recency effect in mind, the first thing I want to jump all over is the draft. Your team had 3 first round picks. Something pretty special. My team had 2, but as we know, the Seahawks really don't like to use first-round picks. I'm still perplexed on it, but either way, I'll let you get it started with talking Raiders a little bit.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was a little nervous going into this draft. I'm not going to lie. I feel like a ton of Raiders fans were just because of how not well our drafts have been in the past, and now we have 3 first-rounders. I mean, I was preparing for the worst, honestly, which a lot of media outlets are kind of pegging us as one of the worst drafting teams of the first round, but it's just not some stock I'm buying. So I guess I'll get into the picks that we made first. Obviously, number 4, Cleveland Farrell. This is the only pick that I feel like you could knock, only because we could have traded back for him. He was not going to go 4th overall. He might have gone top 10, so we could have traded back on some assets back from that, but I mean, I'm not mad. I think he'll be a really good player. Just could have gotten some assets in return for getting him. Then our second pick, Josh Jacobs. I was hoping we were going to get him going into the draft, and I'm glad we did. Maybe hoping we could wait till number 27, but it is what it is. We took him at 24. I'm not mad about it. He's a great player. He's a dual threat running back. And that's going to be something that we could use a lot with Derek Carr and the addition of Antonio Brown. And our last pick, the first round is Jonathan Abram. The grade that I'm looking at right now on USA Today gave us a D+ for this grade. But I don't know. I couldn't disagree with that more. I think Jonathan Abram's a great player. I mean, he maybe could have gone with Byron Murphy in that spot, but I don't know. I feel like with the Raiders and the state that their defense is in now, Jonathan Abram was a better fit for sure. So those are kind of my first take reactions for my Oakland, soon to be Las Vegas Raiders first round draft pick.
Yeah, and I'll just kind of poke in on Jonathan Abrams and a little bit on Cleveland Farrell. Abram I like a lot. I think that I don't quite think he's Derwin James, but I mean, you look at the way that the Chargers kind of helped revamp that defense with the legit threat of Derwin James from the first round. I think he was a Gruden guy, or he's a Gruden grinder. and so I think that the Abram pick is also just another reflection of the whole first round, where John Gruden pretty much said, we're going to go in and get our guys. So Cleveland Farrell, probably not the 4th overall pick. Definitely a first round pick, probably even a top 15 pick. Maybe even a top 10 pick, but the fact of the matter is he's a blue-collar guy from Clemson that knows how to win, and John Gruden wanted him, so they went out and got him. Same kind of thing rolled around with Josh Jacobs at 24. Maybe he'd be there later, but John Gruden wanted him. It was part of his plan, and he wanted him, so he took him. And Jonathan Abram, right there at 27, John Gruden wanted him, so he took him. And so, I mean, I think while you can have a little worry about maybe the Raiders' past drafts, and of course, you know, as a Kings fan, you've been hurt so many times.
Yeah, well, I've normalized to messing up the draft, so.
Yeah, but I think you can be relatively confident in this one at the very least that the Raiders are getting the right like system guys and the guys that they want, not kind of drafting out of place for talent over need, you know?
Yeah, for sure. That's what I liked a lot more too, because although Josh Allen is probably the better edge rusher than Cleveland Farrell is at this moment, he doesn't really fit the defensive scheme we were running and stuff. So I mean, it's easier to get a guy who's talented and put him into a system that he already fit in than to like redo your whole defensive system. So I mean, he's a better fit, I feel like, for what we're running, as well as Jonathan Abram. I'm not mad at all with our three picks in the first round. Excited to see what goes down today and then tomorrow and stuff in the later rounds. So I would say it's a good day to be a Raiders fan. The media isn't giving us nothing, not throwing us any bones, giving us F, C, and D plus on our picks. But I'm chilling. I'm not worried about that.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure the ratings should be that bad. I mean, the Cleveland Farrell pick is pretty disappointing. But at the end of the day, you're still getting three first-round talents. I mean, it's not like, I don't think it'll be anything like the Johnny Manziel draft where the Browns had the three picks and took, what's his name, Cody God, some no-name slot corner that didn't pan out in, like, the top 10. And it's not going to be like that in any fashion. I think the Raiders got a lot of talent. But moving on from your team, we'll kind of pick over to my team that while you were happy with yours, I was a little less happy. I feel like this happens every year after the Seahawks draft. But mostly the first round, because we either don't take anybody or you take somebody that we never heard of. And so it's just kind of like a glossing over as I watch these highlights and I read different things about the Seahawks first round pick, and I kind of start to be like, okay, yeah, you know, I guess that's okay, but I am having a really hard time doing it with all the talent that was left on the board for the Seahawks as their pick. But I guess before I get into that, I will talk about the Seahawks trades first, and it's pretty much three draft trades going in. You had the Frank Clark trade leading up to the draft with Ned at the Seahawks, an extra second next year, I believe, and swapped thirds this year, and then got him an extra first this year at 29 overall, which gives the Seahawks a lot of flexibility to kind of go out and do what they wanted. They entered the night with a league-low five picks. So really not something the Seahawks are used to doing, not something they like. They like to have a lot of picks. And so, of course, we got to see the trade backs, first of which being the Hawks slot at 21. There's a lot of edge rushers, not a lot, but there's still Montez Sweat available at this spot. Montez Sweat. There's also all the wide receivers, pretty much pick of the litter for DBs. One hadn't even been selected yet. Juwan James was still there. Andre Dillard was still there, so a lot of offensive line talent. But the Hawks need more picks, so they trade back from the Packers from 21 to 30, and they net two fourth-round picks, number 114 and 118, so higher fourths. Solid haul, stacks up the draft. Great. From there, I guess we can get into the Seahawks' actual pick, because the trade after the pick was where the Seahawks snagged a little more assets. So I guess at 29, the Seahawks actually made a selection. They chose LJ Collier. Yes, you can double take on the name, because I wasn't sure either. neither were a lot of the analysts. I mean, he was ranked in outside the top 50 in a lot of big boards. Really no big board anywhere had him inside the top 30. So, I mean, it's a little frustrating, and this is kind of the Seahawks doing it again. Last year, Rashad Penny, year before that, Malik McDowell. I mean, Malik McDowell wasn't a first-rounder, but, I mean, it's these guys that the Seahawks see something else that somebody else, that nobody else does, and, I mean, I After, like I said, after reading a little about him, watching some tank, the dude's a big body. He overpowers people. He's really strong. He's got a ferocious motor. Seemed really hyped to be a Seahawk, and I mean, I guess I'm excited to have him too. Just maybe not at 29. There's a little bit of polish at his size. He's gonna need to learn some more moves at the NFL level. But I mean, overall, the projections do slot him as a starting. Like a good solid starting end. Just with all this pass rush talent, it was a little disappointing for me to see the Seahawks kind of push back this far and then get a guy that arguably would have been there in the second round. And on top of that, the dudes that were still available, N'Keal Harry, DeAndre Baker, Greedy Williams, Byron Murphy, Taylor Rapp, Jawan Taylor, I mean, just a ton of talent still on the board, ton of viable first round talent that I was a little sad the Seahawks passed on. But you know, either way, LJ Collier is probably going to come in and be a dude. I mean, the Seahawks have great development, so I guess it's kind of the opposite of your situation, where I guess if I was you and I saw the Raiders taking LJ Collier at 27, I would flip out.
Yeah.
But I see it at 29 and I have to give at least somewhat of a bubble of respect for John and Pete, but man, it was tough.
Yeah. I mean, like, the only like word of advice I guess I have for the Seahawks or Seahawks fans is like, you could have got him later. It's similar to like the Clelin Ferrell situation. Is like, the Seahawks got their guy. They wanted him, clearly, which is why they took him so high. But they could have traded back, got even more picks, and still got their guy. So, I mean, that's kind of the only thing that kind of bothers me, if you want to say that it bothers, or whatever, for lack of a better term, about this pick. Like you said, big body, unpolished, but, I mean, the Seahawks are pretty much known for drafting pretty much no-name talent and developing them into elite talent. So, if I'm a Seahawks fan, I mean, I have full trust in Pete and all those guys, because they've done it before. They have a great track record. So, the only thing I would have liked to see is another trade back and grab him probably today in the second round.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, with that in mind, the Seahawks did select at number 30, and this is kind of a joke between me and my brother, but. So the Seahawks had the 29th and 30th overall pick, and so basically it made it pretty impossible that they would be able to trade that 29th overall pick, because nobody's trading up to get ahead of the Seahawks, because the Seahawks have the next pick.
Yeah.
So it'd basically be like, if they were going to trade 29, the people they're worried about beating out are the people you're trading with, so it's like, you would be trading that pick to somebody who wanted to draft a guy that you wanted, pretty much.
Nah.
And so I was just giving me my brother a joke, and the Seahawks were basically forced to make a draft selection at 29. That's why we ended up with LJ Collier. But one more trade is, after that 29th pick, number 30 got sent to the New York Football Giants, who came in and selected DeAndre Baker, a good cornerback out of Georgia. Another guy that I thought the Seahawks could have gotten, but either way, the Seahawks came away with a fourth round pick, a fifth round pick, and number 37 overall. So we do get a pick right here at the top of the second round, and there is all that talent left still at wide receiver, DB, and O-line to a degree. So, I mean, I guess, all in all, I'm just kind of excited to see how the Seahawks move to shake it out. Is any standouts you want to point out for the rest of the draft, Ant?
Yeah, I guess I'll go with DeAndre Hopkins. Or not DeAndre Hopkins, Dwayne Haskins. I definitely didn't see him falling that far. I thought he was for sure a lock to go to New York, but I mean, I guess the Giants had other plans. I guess... I don't know if we're going to slam the Giants or not, but I mean, easily the worst pick of the first round right there. But I was surprised he didn't go to New York. I was even more surprised that he fell all the way down to 15, because I thought if New York didn't take him, a team within like 4 or 5 picks after that would have. But I mean, I don't know. I'm happy for the guy. He has a chip on his shoulder. He gets to play the Giants twice a year because they're in the same division, so Can't wait to watch that matchup and watch Dwayne Haskins go out there and ball and show the Giants that they missed out. And I guess I'm here for the Dwayne Haskins revenge tour for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I thought it was pretty cool what he said when he, like, I mean, first he was like, the rest of the league done messed up. I mean, it, well, I don't necessarily, I do like Dwayne Haskins, and I think he's going to be successful. I don't think he's a generational quarterback talent.
Yeah.
But I definitely think he's better than Daniel Jones and the WTF pick of the first round for sure. The Giants out here shocking everybody. And it was right off the heels of the Raiders also shocking everybody and taking Cleveland Farrell. And we were like, wow, man, that was a bad pick. And then all of a sudden, Daniel Jones gets selected at 6. And we're like, wow, at least the Raiders got Cleveland Farrell. I mean, jeez. You know, it's a... Because at least Cleveland Farrell still was pretty much regarded as a top three edge talent. I guess if you remove the Bosa effect, I mean, he was regarded as a top three talent edge-wise. So... Daniel Jones, shocking pick, but it's not the one I really want to shout out. The one that I want to shout out, which was pretty shocking on both fronts, was Pittsburgh trading up with Denver for that number 10 pick. The Steelers gave up a haul for it. They moved up 10 spots, so they gave the Broncos the 20th pick. They also gave them the 52nd pick in the second round and a third round selection in 2020. So, I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers moved up to select Devin Bush, kind of shorter but really explosive athletic linebacker out of Michigan. I guess you know about Devin Bush.
Oh, yeah.
Dude's absolute beast. I mean, apparently this Broncos, who also had a need for linebackers after Devin White was gone, where apparently they weren't that interested or weren't that high on Devin Bush, and obviously got a big trade package offer from the Steelers, so they were willing to accept that. It was just a little surprising that the Steelers were able to give, or not able, were willing to give so much for Devin Bush. But, I mean, they want a dude that can come in and replace Ryan Shazier after his unfortunate neck injury. And then on top of that, the Broncos are just acquiring picks. It's part of a rebuild. So, I mean, while they don't get the linebacker that I think they needed... there's still a lot of time left and a lot of draft left to kind of fill more holes, but Broncos load up on picks. They got an extra second, extra third next year, and the Steelers have their linebacker of the future. They just better hope that he works out because of all that kind of talent that they gave up with an aging Big Ben, who they just gave a big extension to.
Yeah, I mean, shout out Michigan alum. No matter what team you go to, I'm always going to root for you, no matter if you're on the dirty Steelers. You still got a place in my heart. So, shout out to him. Shout out to Rashawn Gary, too, I guess. Another standout real quick. Got drafted a lot higher than I was anticipating. So, I guess shout out to the Michigan boys.
Yeah, dude, Rashawn Gary, I thought was going to go later. I mean, a lot of people had him going to the Seahawks. And
yeah.
I was totally fine with that.
Yeah, a lot of the mock drafts I saw had him, like, around the 22-ish or so pick.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Either way, it was an exciting first round. Lots of head scratchers, lots of trades. I'm excited for the rest of the draft, especially now that the Seahawks have 8 more picks. This is where I get to have fun watching the Seahawks take all these late guys that nobody's ever heard of, and as Ant said, turn them into superstars.
Yeah. Silver lining, real quick. The Raiders didn't pick a wide receiver in the first round, so that's pretty dope. Cause we got the history of just drafting the 4-3 guy in the first round, no matter who they are, no matter what stats they put up, just because they run fast. So.
Well, now you can take the 4-3 guy in the second round. It's DK is still there. But. Either way, there is a lot of good wide receivers left on the board, so the Raiders still can go after that big body. A lot of talent left in the draft, offensive line still. So I'm excited for the rest of the draft, and you excited to talk some NBA playoffs, Ant?
Super excited, dude.
All right, well then I'll let you take it away with your kind of first standout from the first round here.
All right, so the first round of the NBA playoffs have been honestly a lot more exciting than I was anticipating. I mean, I felt like we kind of got screwed over with the matchups that we got because we did have a lot of interesting potential matchups and we got literally none of them. But even though some of the series didn't go all that long, there is still ex some excitement to them and obviously some standouts, which is what we'll get into right now. And I guess the first standout I'll get into is Kyrie and the Celtics. Kyrie Irving going off. I mean, he's averaging 22 and 5 or 22.5 and 7.6 assists, which is at face value is decent, but I mean it's on really good efficiency and he's distributing a lot more than he usually does, so that's good to see. My biggest thing with the Celtics is they came out and showed us what we wanted to see. I mean, granted it was against the Pacers, but I mean a lot of people were disrespecting the Celtics and saying the Pacers were going to take them to six, possibly seven, which was that wasn't it. Chief said that the Pacers are
Not
going to take
without
them to six,
Oladipo.
but like it was the Pacers without Oladipo, but like I said, a lot of people were saying they're gonna go six, but the Celtics showed us what we wanted to see. They gelled as a unit, figured a lot of things out, which is giving us hope in the Celtics that they can potentially make a NBA Finals run.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have the Celtics down as one of my other standouts. And I mean, as we kind of both mentioned, it is the Victor Oladipo-less Indiana Pacers, which makes them obviously less dangerous on offense, but they still played well the second half of the season. I mean, obviously managed to get to the playoffs and end up here against the Celtics. But I mean, Kyrie stepped up. I felt like Jason Tatum had a really good series. The defense came out. I mean, Boston's trademark back even before they had Kyrie was killer defense. And that showed up. I mean, especially without a primary alpha dog playmaker, the Indiana Pacers were just kind of suffocated all series, and the Celtics gelled, stepped up. They had six players averaging 11 plus points this series. So, I mean, that was really phenomenal to see. And while it is kind of a lackluster opponent and the injured, beat up Indiana Pacers, I'm still excited for the prospects of what it means. And as you mentioned, I mean, we saw a Celtics team that actually was showcasing some of the potential that they had to go out and win a championship. And I think at the I mean with the fear of losing Kyrie and I mean the Anthony Davis looming, it's gonna have to be a showout postseason to I think keep this core intact for Boston.
Yeah, for sure. At least to keep Kyrie in. I mean, like I said,
I mean,
it's.
you already got like Hayward locked in, and you have the young guys locked in, I guess. But I mean, to keep Kyrie for sure. I mean, as to me at least, Kyrie's the clear alpha. I mean,
Yeah, I mean, yeah. He's
he's the
the clear
oldest,
alpha.
and I guess not older than Horford, but he's the oldest like primary alpha scorer. He ain't no beta, so.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Kyrie's definitely alpha mentality. I mean, that's pretty much what led him to Boston and what forced it. It is why he forced his way out of Cleveland, pretty much. But I mean, this is great for the Celtics, great for NBA fans in general. Not so great for the Bucks. Like, I know the Bucks are the best team in the league and stuff, but they are inexperienced, and getting a Celtics team that's clicking next round is not ideal for them. But I mean, I'm glad to see the Celtics playing well. It just means for a more interesting playoffs, especially when my team's not in the playoffs. So yeah, shout out to the Celtics. So I guess you could take it from here with another standout you have.
Yeah, absolutely. Shout out the Celtics. And then I guess before I jump all over this standout, I will shout out a shoreline goat, Ryan Eisler,
Oh, yeah.
my fellow Labro. He's also a Clippers fan.
Yeah,
And,
unfortunately, Clippers.
unfortunately, but there's something special going on in the Bay Area, man. And the Clippers have taken 2 games from the number one seeded Golden State Warriors. I'm not really sure how they're doing it with career nights from guys like Patrick Beverley and Danilo Gallinari. You know, backup rookie guys like, I mean, guys you didn't really even think about until the trade deadline, like Landry Shamet and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Trade afterthoughts like Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell in the Chris Paul trade. I mean, dudes, absolutely balling out. I'll let you kind of get a little more into the numbers. But the Warriors have been taken down twice, once in a 31-point comeback. That's unreal. Eisler's been talking to me all through the playoffs. Warriors going down. He thinks it's going to be really funny when the Clippers take on the Warriors and beat them in the second round, or the Clippers take on the Rockets in the second round and beat them. I mean, I'm playing along because I think it's just crazy. The eight-seeded Warriors at one point, in most eyes, deemed as like one of the greatest teams of all time, adding DeMarcus Cousins, now obviously hurt, is just getting pushed to the brink by the eight-seeded Clippers, who don't have a superstar on their team. Like, literally, their closest thing to a superstar is either Danilo Gallinari or Lou Will. And Lou Will's the sixth-man superstar. It's unreal. The only number I have is Lou Williams has gone for, I think, 33 and 34 in the two Clipper wins. And then on top of that, I wanted to shout out Landry Shamet's game-winning three with 16 seconds left in their 31-point comeback. Because, I mean, you just saw him down 31, 130 to 131, and it was just kind of like, well, who's going to make this bucket? Like, who's going to be the dude? And I mean, if it's not Lou Will, I don't. And then just Landry Shamet. So, I mean, all around, shout out the Clippers. I mean, they've absolutely stepped up and created this prime destination for a Kawhi, for a KD, for a Kyrie. You know, the Clippers is a good landing spot now, and I think it'll be tough when the Warriors, you know, if they blow that 3-1 lead, because they're probably not going to get KD. I don't think he'd do it twice. But you know, it's a short trip. He might.
Yeah. I guess what I'll start off with is the gift and the curse that is the Los Angeles Clippers not having a superstar. Without a superstar, dudes like Lou Will, Montrezl Harrell, and even Landry Shamet are able to get the last shot. I mean, you don't really know where it's coming from, and all three of those guys are great options. Even Danilo Gallinari is a really good option for a final shot. But, I mean, that being said, you kind of have to have a superstar to win anything. So that's why I guess it's a gift and a curse, because they don't have somebody to lead them really anywhere far. And I guess another kind of thing that's flown under the radar is the coaching. Doc Rivers is honestly in his prime right now in coaching. I know he gets a lot of flack for kind of riding the backseat with the Celtics' big three and that championship that they won. But the last two or three seasons or so in LA, he's really stepped up and been a coach that could be considered coach of the year. I would slander Doc Rivers all the time because I thought he was overrated, since his only like significant run or whatever came when he had three Hall of Famers on his team, and how much the Clippers didn't succeed when they had the Lob City trio, whatever. But I mean, he's really stepped up his game. The Clippers are really well coached. Everybody is playing great. They're clicking on all cylinders. So that's, I don't know, it's just really, really good. And like you mentioned, which is something I really wanted to talk about too, is that they're a huge free agent destination now. You have a coach who's on top of his game in Doc Rivers. You have all of the role pieces that you need. And it's, especially for Kawhi, I could definitely see Kawhi going to L.A., if he leaves Toronto. If he does leave Toronto, the only place I could see him going is the Clippers, honestly. I don't know why, because it's pretty much the same situation he's in, but I would say it's a slight upgrade, considering the Raptors don't really have, like, I guess they have Pascal Siakam, but they don't really have, like, a Lou Will, Montrezl Harrell kind of duo role play, freaking super
Saiyan like
brothers
Raptors,
or whatever.
The Raptors' value is more defensive, where the Clippers have
like, yeah,
offensive potential.
For sure. But I guess getting into those guys, like you said, Lou Will averaging 24.4 a game, Off the bench, of course. I mean, going off, leading the team in scoring. He was around, like, I want to say, like, 8th or 9th in the NBA in playoff scoring off the bench. And then Montrezl Harrell going off for 20 a game. But the crazy part is he's shooting 75%. When I saw that, I was like, he's probably averaging around, like, 14, 15 points. But the dude's averaging 20. So that's ridiculous efficiency out of a dude. And I saw this tweet that was pretty funny. It said, Montrezl Harrell plays every possession like his family is being held hostage, and the only way they'll be free is if he can get a bucket. So, I mean, that's accurate. I mean, that's the way the dude plays, and that's a dude that you like to have on a team. So, I mean, I'm all here for the kind of Clippers over the Warriors, even though I don't think it'll happen.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's unlikely, but it'd definitely be exciting to see. Of course it would. I mean, an 8 seed upsetting a 1 seed in any season is phenomenal. But for it, if it were to be the Warriors, that would be
yeah, that'd be
that would just
else.
Be unbelievable. But I guess moving on from there, I don't want to say a ton about either of these kind of next. These next two that I have, so I'll just do a quick shout out to the Raptors. They kind of got punched in the mouth by the Magic. They stole game one. They came out of nowhere and were randomly able to shoot threes at like 40% clip, something yeah. They hadn't done all year.
Top 10 questions science still can't answer.
Yeah, big facts. And I mean, the Raptors, I think, were probably scratching their heads a little bit, like, as they were trying to shake off the first round, like, kind of jet lag that they have as an organization. And then the Magic's just start draining threes, and so they're like, all right, what's going on? Still only lost by, what, like, 3 points or
yeah,
four?
Yeah, it came down to a DJ Augustine three at that.
Yeah, DJ Augustine used to be good on 2K 5-6 years ago. either way, they got punched in the mouth a little bit, just kind of like the Nets did to the 76ers, but they rallied. Kawhi Leonard came up and absolutely balled out for the series. I mean, pretty much matched or passed his regular season numbers, averaging almost 28 a game, 6.6 rebounds, 3 assists, 1.2 steals, only 2.8 turnovers, and had a player efficiency rating of 29.13, which is pretty close to, just for comparison, pretty close to Giannis and James Harden's PER during the regular season. So, I mean, Kawhi came in and was clearly that alpha. Sorry, there's a leaf blower going by. You saw what the Raptors were able to do without kind of a true set-in-stone superstar, kind of splitting time between Lowry and DeRozan. And Lowry came out and had a little bit of a rough start in game one. But luckily, Kawhi was there to carry the rest of the series. And that kind of defensive potential that we mentioned just slightly earlier is there. There's so much length. There's so many different lineups that the Budenholzer-led Raptors can send at you. And, I mean, we mentioned the Clippers, the Raptors, as is really only two spots. I mean, he kind of either joins this upstart Clippers spot or sticks with Budenholzer, who is got that Spurs mentality kind of. And the more the Raptors win, the more likely, to me at least, that Kawhi stays. Just because when you develop that kind of... I know he doesn't want to be in Toronto, but, I mean, when you start developing that kind of chemistry with your teammates and scheme, and it gets deeper in playoffs, so I don't know. Shout out the Raptors for actually stepping up and doing what they were supposed to, is dominating a postseason series.
Yeah, I mean, after that first game, I was like, okay, that's cool and all, but I mean, this is really going to end up a gentleman's sweep, which is what it ended up being. Kawhi is like, I think he's like 34th in points per game in the playoffs. I mean, really stepping it up. I think he's averaging like around 28, maybe a little less than 28, which is something we haven't really
just
seen from him, because he's usually around like the 25 point range. So he's kind of taking that next step up as a scorer. I mean, I think this team is a lot different than other Raptors teams and stuff, because they have Kawhi Leonard and they have Mike Budenholzer as their coach. So, I mean, I'm excited to see what happens in this next round, and I guess if that's all you have on the Raptors, I'll get into the next standout I have, which is their opponent that they'll be facing in the second round. So, what stood out to me the most about the 76ers was Ben Simmons and, to some degree, Joel Embiid, but more so Ben Simmons because of the choke job he had last year and how he opened up the series against the Nets. But he ended up with averages of 17.2, 6.6, and 7.6 on 64% shooting, which is crazy efficiency for a dude who, you know, can't shoot anywhere from like 3 or 5 feet outside away from the basket. So that's crazy efficiency. I mean, he stepped up. It looks like he's ready to take that next step. But I guess my kind of question is, how will he respond to Kawhi? Because, I mean, this season, Kawhi's pretty much just put the straps on him every time they've played the Raptors. And, I mean, I don't know if the Raptors are going to run Kawhi on Ben Simmons or on Jimmy Butler or whatever, but, I mean, I guess that's looking too far into it. And I guess another standout for the 76ers was Joel Embiid. I mean, he's been injured, clearly. He's been hobbling around. He didn't play a game. But he still has averages of 24, 13.5, 3.5, and 2.8 blocks, which is ridiculous if you think about the amount of time he's playing, which is only 24 minutes a game. So, I mean, he's really out here putting up an all-time type series only on 24 minutes a game, which is crazy. So Joel Embiid's low-key becoming a superstar in the league. I mean, I don't consider him that right now. I mean, he's a star for sure, but he's low-key putting himself in the upper echelon of NBA players, and we're not even really noticing. It's just happening.
Well, I mean, yeah, so you mentioned his health. His health is obviously a concern. And to me, at least, that health is a factor of why you can't make him, like, why you can't legitimately call him a superstar right now, or, like, one of the game's greatest. Just because, I mean, you've got to be able to do it consistently. But with that in mind, I mean, you mentioned those smaller numbers. I mean, good Lord, 24 minutes per game, averaging almost 25 points, 13.5 rebounds, 3.5 assists, almost 3 blocks and a steal. That's in 24 minutes.
Yeah,
that's unreal.
Crazy.
That's absolutely absurd. I mean, that's like 2K my player numbers that you put, like, you play your 18 minutes and score your 56 points or whatever. It's almost 2K-esque. It's kind of silly. He's got a player efficiency rating of 39.09, which would be the highest in NBA history. I mean, obviously, it's a smaller sample size, but still pretty ridiculous. And in only 24 minutes, he's still averaging 17 field goal attempts per game, which is the most on the 76ers, which kind of shows that alpha presence. But he's shooting 50%, and Ben Simmons is filling his complimentary role really well. I was excited to see the Sixers kind of bounce back and actually just take it to the Nets, and we weren't seeing, oh, geez, is this kind of Sixers core going to crumble without a healthy Embiid? Well, he's healthy enough to beat the Nets, and hopefully he's going to be healthy enough to see a really good series against the Raptors, because I do really like this matchup, and the Raptors have the bodies to throw at the 76ers, which is why, without getting too much into it, which is why I think the Raptors have the better shot here, is just because of the depth. But either way, it's going to be really exciting. I mean, you got a lot of the game's best players in Embiid, Simmons, Kawhi, Jimmy Butler. I mean, a lot of those names end up as 76ers, but that's just kind of the way
the
it shakes out
crumbles
here. And I'm excited. It should be a really... Yeah, it's how the cookie crumbles. Should be a really exciting second round and a number of reasons. I mean... And I guess for one of those reasons, I'll just do a quick shout out to the Rockets. The real reason I want to shout out the Rockets here is pretty much because of James Harden's struggles, I guess, in this first round, and the way the team played around him. So, I mean, the Rockets came away with a gentleman's sweep of the fifth-seeded Utah Jazz. Unfortunately, the Jazz just had another bad matchup and got bull-rushed by the Rockets. This time it just happened to be in the first round. The Rockets were able to gentleman sweep them despite James Harden averaging, God, a mediocre 27.8 points per game. Freaking embarrassing. And 37% shooting.
Yeah, that's
from the
more
field.
Of the
So that's kind of the bigger one. the bigger issue. He still shot 35% from three, which is basically all you can do to stay afloat. Pretty much probably the only reason he still averaged 27, because he shot 35% on 12 attempts from three per game. But that 37% has got to come up. You're not going to beat the Warriors. You're not going to beat the Clippers even shooting like that. It's got to be better. Got to be better play out of Harden. And I understand that the Jazz are running ran a weird scheme, but I mean, he kind of diced it up the first two nights. I mean, the efficiency wasn't great, but it was way better than it was the last three games of the series. But the good news is that the Rockets absolutely rallied around him. Chris Paul actually looked vintage in Game 5. Really was ready to move on. PJ Tucker's been legit all series. Eric Gordon's legit all series. Clint Capella, besides that one game with the respiratory infection, was an animal all series. So I mean, the team really coming together around Harden, and I know the Warriors are not going to be able to play as good a defense as the Jazz, at least in my opinion. Not necessarily because the wings can't cover, but because you don't have Rudy Gobert waiting in the paint, and it's a lot harder for James Harden to score up in Rudy Gobert's face than it will be in Andrew Bogut's face. and that's assuming the Clippers don't pull off some miracle. But either way, really excited for the Rockets' prospects moving forward in this second round matchup, potentially with the Warriors or Clippers, with a healthier Chris Paul, one hopes. So I had a lot of good things pointing forward. I'm just kind of looking to brush off James Harden's efficiency struggles as playing a tough D with Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm super hyped for the second round, especially if we're given the series we most likely will be given, which is the Warriors and Rockets. I mean, last year it was the best series of the playoffs for sure, and
lived up to the hype. I mean, yeah, it was the true finals.
I mean, I'm expecting something similar, assuming health is all there. But yeah, James Harden definitely needs to step up that efficiency. It's good that the supporting cast is playing really well. I feel like they always do whenever James Harden goes out, except for that infamous Game 7 against the Warriors. But besides that, the supporting cast of the Rockets has a really good track record. So it's good to see them ball out and kind of carry the team when James Harden can't. So I guess I'll shout out the Rockets too. Chris Paul, like you said, looking like vintage Chris Paul, which is always a good thing. That's kind of how it was last year and what kind of got them in the position to beat the Warriors. So I mean, I'm just excited for the second round all the way around with all the matchups that we're gonna have.
Yeah, the second round, it should be awesome. I mean, the teams that move forward did move forward. We saw some excitement, but not any real letdowns. Besides maybe Donovan Mitchell,
yeah,
on the Jazz. I was pretty disappointed in his performance, but you know, if anything, he'd be a Big Red's bust. But either way, I'm excited. I'm looking at the NBA with positivity. We've seen the Warriors lose twice before the Western Conference Finals. It's pretty unbelievable. Yeah, shout out the NBA playoffs.
Sure. Shout out the playoffs. I mean, definitely the most interesting playoffs we've had in a while. Before the finals or the conference finals and whatnot. I mean, the two matchups in the East are going to be super exciting. At least one of the matchups in the West is going to be super exciting. It'll be interesting to see who the Blazers face and how that series will go, because, I mean, it could go either way. I guess we'll shout out DeMar DeRozan because it kind of went under the table with the NFL draft and everything yesterday, but he did come out and ball out in an elimination game, so I guess shout out to that.
Took him to seven, too, yeah.
So is that
Big shout out to DeMar.
Yep. Is that all we got for today?
Yeah, I mean, unless you wanted to shout out Dame a little bit. I mean, that's pretty much all I have wrapped up, but I mean, I think at least his Game 5 stat
is worth
a mention.
For those that don't know, Damian Lillard went absolutely sicko mode the whole series against the Thunder. I mean, it was super sick to watch. I watched every game of it. It was crazy how much he stepped up and how much, like, it generally looked like he hated Russell Westbrook the way he was playing. So I guess I'll let you kind of read off the stats.
So I'll say my piece on him really quick. Dame absolutely balled out. A few years back, he did some things in the postseason against the Rockets that broke my heart, but kind of made me cement, at least in my eyes, that he was a legit cold-blooded killer. And then kind of flopped last year. It was like, whoa. But as Ant said, he watched every game. I did not watch every game, but I watched a couple of them, and obviously was privy to the absolute outburst in Game 5 for their gentleman sweep of the OKC Thunder. Dame dropped 50 on 17 of 33 shooting, 10 of 18 from 3, 7 boards, 6 assists. The stat line alone, absolutely insane. Dame absolutely balled out. And like you mentioned, it seemed like every time he'd look at Russell Westbrook, it was like he wanted to score a bucket, not just to get a bucket, but to like to literally make Russell Westbrook feel inferior. With every three-pointer, he was like, this is how much better I am than you. This is how much better I am than you. And I mean, with two clutch shots, 30 seconds, and obviously the game winner, the 37-foot game winner over Paul George, that was absolutely a moment, a superstar moment. Dame saying, putting the league on notice, I'm here to play. And while it was to the obviously very flawed Thunder in my eyes, you're still doing it to Paul George and Russell Westbrook, two people that are arguably top 10 players, or were. I mean, you know, we perhaps dialogue time and things, but I can't say enough about Damian Lillard.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, it's crazy that Damian Lillard really has two all-time playoff shots under his belt now. I mean, with the one against the Rockets, and now this 37 step back footer on one of the best defenders in the league. I mean, it's not just a crazy moment as of now. It's an all-time moment. So I mean, it's always cool to see those moments take place and watch it live and all that. And understand all the context that goes behind it too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you mentioned that he has two all-time ones. Just a little tidbit, because I have been a Rockets fan since then, and a little before then. And so I actually remember pulling up to my buddy's house, and I was listening in Sirius XM in the radio to the Rockets, and they just hate, like, they had the lead. The Blazers had got the board, whatever. It didn't really matter to me. Like, they're still going to win. So I turn off my car, start walking into my buddy's house. As soon as I step inside, get a notification that the Trailblazers won.
Oof.
And I just am sitting there baffled at how this Dwight Howard, prime Dwight Howard arguably, and James Harden-led team had blown this. And it just speaks to the greatness of Damian Lillard, especially.
Yeah, I mean, it's for sure a good thing to see Dame time back in the playoffs. He went missing last year, and I guess the year before that, but it's good to see him back. I'm excited for the second round to see who the Trailblazers get, because the Trailblazers can potentially make a run to the finals the way they're playing right now. So it's another kind of wild card team that we didn't really see or didn't really think was going to make any noise. But, I mean, they have the potential to. CJ McCollum was also playing really good. He didn't really play that good in Game 5. He played good down the stretch, which is a good sign. So, I mean, Trailblazers adding another element to these NBA playoffs for sure.
They really are, and I think, quite frankly, that this, depending on how Game 7 shakes out between the Nuggets and the Spurs, I mean, this shapes up to be a series that, in my opinion at least, would be an absolute nightmare for the Rockets if they were to get past the second round. I mean, you're either facing Dame Time, who is cold-blooded and has done it to the Rockets, or you're facing Greg Popovich.
Yeah. Ideally, you get the Nuggets in the conference finals. That's what you want.
Right? But like, hey, the Rockets aren't worried about the Nuggets, you know, but I'll tell you what, D'Antoni will lose some sleep over Pop, and, I mean, at least Harden will look twice at Dame because he knows what he can do. but either way, you got anything left?
That's all I got on the agenda.
And that'll wrap it up for me, too. Thank you for listening.
This is Abjant signing off. Shout out to you guys, the best fans in the world. I guess we'll see you next time.